Hello and welcome to the Writer's Block. Yes, people, it's the Writer's Block. It's Sunday. It's 10 p.m. and here in Central Europe, in all over the European continent, in fact, except for those sad people in the British Isles and Portugal. Let's not forget Portugal. And it's time for the Writer's Block. And here with me tonight, I have Pax Populi, a pox upon our enemies, indeed, not upon our people, but it is a fine pun nonetheless. Mr. Populi, Pox, would you please introduce yourself to this fine assembly?
Certainly. Thank you for having me. I'm Pox Populi. I started a YouTube channel, I think it was in 2018. And I made a lot of videos back in the original days of that channel. And then have neglected it from time to time and have pursued other interests. Real life stuff gets in the way. But that's where I got my start, was just making some videos on YouTube right around 2018. And then I've got, I've had a few Twitter accounts, all been banned, like I think 4 or 5 times on Twitter. So people might remember me from Twitter. They might have followed me there. I am based in Spain. My ethnic origins, my father's Italian, my mother's Welsh-Irish, and I've lived in other places in Europe too. I spent some years living in France and traveling around Europe, so very familiar with this blessed land of ours and our people, and that's pretty much my story summed up.
Well, I Italian, Welsh, and Irish, so you, at least you're not mixed race.
Almost.
Well, it's it really is like I know you're Northern Italian, right? So you're all within the Alpenid race. Unlike myself, I am a very unstable combination of whites of racial groups. At least I'm 100% white, if not, monoethnic. But hey, we have some crass financial concerns to address. As always, this stream is brought to you by Alaska Chaga. Alaska Chaga is what keeps me going, the elixir of life, which keeps me handsome, which keeps which keeps me the belle of the ball, which gives me my beautiful singing and podcasting voice. And it's what's going to keep me handsome and sleek, fat and sleek, a true hog of Epicurus's herd, well into my old age. Alaska Chaga, the nectar of racist podcasters. Never leave home without it. Also, my grandfather reports it's great for his bathroom problems. I don't know what his bathroom problems are, but my grandpa is a wise man. You know, he's 83. You don't get to be 83 without having a little something up in your noggin. Well, anyways, people, we are here to talk about the truckers up in Canada. And I almost forgot. I have the banner flashing up after like 3 episodes of forgetting it. I even have it ready. So you can always donate through Entropy to ask myself and Mr. Populi questions. You can also donate to give us donations. And yesterday, from what I hear, Greg had some troll insulting him over Entropy, and he did not accept the money. Well, folks, I'm less choosy about that. You can insult me. You can send your hurtful remarks through Entropy, and I'm just going to take them down in my little black notebook, and I will keep your name in mind. But until then, feel free to insult me and pay me for it. And, of course, you should not insult our guest, unless you pay us for it.
If you pay to insult me, I don't mind.
I think that might be a fine career. I have a very thick skin when I'm receiving money. Well, so I think that's all the crass financial concerns out of the way. And I see people, they are gathering in ever-increasing numbers to watch the Writer's Block. Thank you for that, kind sirs. Well, Pox, Mr. Populi, you recently wrote something about the trucker convoy. Now, I use the word trucker convoy skeptic to describe you in the promo notes for this show. Would you say that term is accurate?
Yes, I would. I'm okay with that term. I think it's accurate. I think a bit of skepticism in these times is wise and appropriate. And I think, you know, as we're speaking now, as far as I know, the most recent updates regarding the trucker convoy is that the Ottawa police are clearing them out. And so I hate to say it, I don't want to be the party pooper, but I do think my skepticism was warranted.
I'm not really up to date. Are they being expelled by the Ottawa police? Is
the last what, the last what I've seen, Ottawa been... Ottawa Bridge was like the main place where the truckers were holding out, and Trudeau has, you know, sort of dug his heels in, and you know, he spoke with Biden and the Biden administration, and he's basically organized a very militaristic police response to finish this once and for all. And last I saw, like, the Washington Examiner reported, their language that they used was, Ottawa police are now clearing out Ottawa Bridge. So I think that that means that more or less the truckers are being politely or not so politely asked to leave. And I saw some videos being shared on Telegram of some of the truckers were like interlocking arms and singing the national anthem. And that makes for a nice 30-second, you know, moral boost video of look how well they're behaving. But I imagine that once the camera was turned off and they stopped singing, they packed up and left. Saskatchewan did respond positively as far as our perspective goes, or the truckers' perspective. So Saskatchewan did, in response to the truckers, say that they're going to scrap, I think, almost all of the COVID restrictions and the requirement to show vaccine passports and that sort of stuff. They haven't set an exact date, but they said, like, you know, within a certain timeline, they're going to scrap all of this. And they also, in the premier of Saskatchewan's statement, he actually said, and I hope the federal government will do the same. So that we can say is a bit of a win, and that's great. But as far as, you know, getting a federal response that they wanted, or as far as accomplishing the truckers' objectives that they themselves said they wanted, I'm not sure if they achieved what they set out to do, which is a bit of a shame. I wanted them to, you know, to do so. But in the end,
what were the objectives of the Freedom Convoy? One of your criticisms, and I forgot to mention this, Vox Populi has a Substack. Now, personally, I don't like Substack. I think it's I wouldn't even call it a piece of shit website. It's a shit stain website. It's a skid mark on the internet. And so, but it is what it is. People use it. And I'm not going to give money to Substack, no matter how big a fan of people I am, but it is what it is, you know. So you have a Substack blog.
Yeah, I didn't
and you really... And you posted something which is very interesting about the truckers, which is, I read this and I think, I need to get this guy on my show. He has brains, right? So one of the, let's call them charges you level at the truckers, is that they have no coherent or winnable objectives.
Yeah, and as I was sort of following different reports coming out of the truckers' campaign, and as I was reading responses to truckers, you know, to videos that were going viral, and reading the comments, I came across one that I posted the screenshot in my article. So ostensibly, the truckers are saying that they don't want to have to show their proof of vaccination when they're crossing borders, and they don't want to be forced to be vaccinated to remain employed. And I totally agree with that. Those are demands that I think are reasonable. What's interesting is that there were some Canadians with sort of maybe, I guess, you know, knowledge, intimate knowledge of the situation, and they were saying, well, the truckers who aren't jabbed or don't want it, don't want to have to show their vaccine QR code, whatever, passport at a border crossing, they've simply been taken off of the routes that involve border crossings. They've been taken off those routes and they've been placed on other ones. So that's interesting. So there's a lot of truckers who maybe not actually aren't actually affected by this, and they made their complaints heard and they were simply put on different routes that don't involve crossing a border. Okay. And then it also came to light, it was just, you know, it's a fact. And even like the leftists and the globalists and the Antifa who are opposed to this trucker convoy pointed this out. In their view, they are using this as a way of saying that the truckers aren't working class. They are the petite bourgeoisie. Mm-hmm. So the truckers are mostly owner operated. So they're not actually in the employ. They're sort of self-employed, which means that they can decide for themselves if they want to be vaxxed or not. So that was another interesting thing.
This is actually, people were saying that, oh, the left will look for any excuse to serve the, you know, global homo, the neoliberals. But this is actually consistent with Marxist class analysis, which is something I've pointed out, that basically Marxist class analysis is insane. It means that everyone who is employed, right, some guy digging ditches, some guy flipping burgers, and Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, and Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, they're all in the same social class of employed, you know, proletariat. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whereas, I don't know, Jeff Bezos, who is the owner of Amazon, is in the same social class as my local butcher or a truck driver who owns his own truck. Yeah. Oh, you are bourgeoisie because you own a company.
Yeah.
But no, Tim Cook and Sundar Pichai are working class.
Exactly. So the leftist criticism is obviously incoherent and just, I mean, is anyone surprised by hypocrisy?
This is from Karl Marx. It's not something modern, right?
Oh, sure. And I only mentioned it just to point out that it's something that all sides were noticing. I don't have any problem with the fact that these are owner-operated truck drivers, and I don't see them as the bourgeoisie rich elite. They are working class men. What was interesting though is just what are the implications of that insofar as their obligations to be vaccinated or their requirements to be vaccinated? Because if you're owner operator and you own your own rig and you are kind of like your own boss, no one's imposing that on you. So that was just something else that made me start, you know, scratching my head. And then they went to Ottawa. So they went to the capital, and many Canadians on either side of this, whatever side they fell on, whether they supported the trucker convoy or not, but Canadians just in general were pointing out that, because some Canadians were even doubting that this was the correct course of action to take. And they were pointing out that, you know, it's not a federal mandate. These are all provincial. It all depends on the province. So like I said earlier, like Saskatchewan is scrapping the COVID restrictions, and that's great. But then other provinces will keep them or take whatever decision they want. So even though it's great to see Trudeau scurrying and squirming and hiding with his tail between his legs, this isn't entirely his fault. And he's not the person to go to and say, look, we don't want these vaccine mandates because these are provincial decisions. So they should have, if they were going to blockade parliaments, they could have, you know, blockade the parliament of Saskatchewan or the parliament of, Alberta. So they went, but they went to Ottawa, and they all congregated in Ottawa, and there's tens of thousands of them. And, you know, is that the correct course of action to take? I had some doubts. I expressed them in the article. And now I think, you know, given the events of the past 48 hours, the federal employees of Canada, that was the federal mandate. The federal employees of Canada were required to be vaccinated. But the federal employees of Canada weren't the ones doing this protest. It's these owner-operator truckers. So it just kind of was a bit, the objectives, the goals of saying, look, we don't want these mandatory vaccines. We don't want to show a QR code when we cross borders. Okay, I get that. But that's not a federal mandate. So it just sort of made me start doubting if there's coherency, you know?
It made me wonder if it's a border crossing thing. I think, oh, what's his name? The distributist. He was complaining some about this because he was, his wife is Canadian, right? So they were in Canada, his family visiting relatives. And then when they came back to America, he complained about how irrational American border agents are about corona passes and quick tests and everything that. So I'm thinking if maybe this isn't because Canada only has a land border with one country, that is America. Actually has two land borders with America, both of them with America, right? And so this could be an American issue. This could be an American of an issue of American the American federal government imposing vax mandates for everyone coming into the country. I think this is also a requirement for Europeans and people coming in from Mexico as well, unless they come in illegally. And at that
Yeah,
case,
then
you
there's no
don't need,
problem.
right? Yeah,
Yeah,
you're
like,
basically allowed to do whatever you want.
and I think there is something about intra-Canadian domestic border crossings from one province to another that they were also upset about. So I think it's sort of like in even in the European Union, like one country in the European Union might not be so gung-ho with these restrictions, but then they another country is. And so if you might be a citizen of that European country that's not so intense with these restrictions and these requirements, but if you want to cross the border into another one, now you have to enter that country's frame and that country's rule book. And so I think a problem was that these truckers, even in Canada, as they were crossing from one province to another province, they were having to show or their proof of vaccination and all this kind of stuff. But like I said, that the ones who didn't want to do that were just put on different routes that didn't involve the crossing. That doesn't mean it's okay that that these mandates exist, but I'm saying it looked like the truckers who didn't want to inject themselves with this potion had found a compromise. So basically the main thing of the theme of the article was contrasting Fabian strategy, small scale skirmishes, wearing down your enemy, small victories that lots of small victories that amount to winning the big victory, the war, and contrasting that with a sort of Pyrrhic victory where you go all in, pitched battle, and you might win on the day, but you suffer so many casualties that it really is a defeat.
Right.
And I was seeing a lot of similarities with like the January 6th, the worst event in American history, January 6th, worse than Pearl Harbor, worse than September 11th, But I was seeing that there's some similarities in that you get this big group of people, it's thousands of people, and they want to do this grand act, this grandiose act, and then it starts getting infiltrated, and then there's all these grifters, and then there's all these malevolent, suspicious actors pulling the strings, and then the good intentions start becoming very poisoned, and the outcome ends up being disastrous. I mean, there's people who participate in that January 6th fiasco who are rotting in solitary confinement still as we're speaking. And that's disastrous. That's a disastrous result. It didn't achieve anything. And if we are here speaking, and if the information that I saw in the Washington Examiner is correct, the truckers are being cleared out. The police are BTFOing them. And I don't think they accomplished what they wanted as far as a sort of whether and in the end too, they were saying that they wanted Trudeau to step down, they wanted the government to step down, so the demands were getting very, even political, that they wanted regime change basically, and that didn't happen obviously. And as far as I'm aware, they didn't get any of the other objectives that they wanted met. So I would say it's a Pyrrhic victory. They went out to battle, they amassed a great force, and they went out, and it boosted morale. It not it was great watching Trudeau cower and squirm, but at what cost? And I mentioned in the essay I wrote, one of the immediate effects of this was hundreds of trucks shipping meat were unable to get into Canada. And that was another thing that raised my alarm bells, knowing, because I don't know how informed you are about like the Great Reset agendas into our diet and the plans they have for our diet and, you know, Greta Thunberg style environmental, save the environment, stop eating hamburgers and that sort of thing. And I just thought it was very convenient that one of the direct results of this dubious trucker convoy, trucker blockade, was that all these shipments, all these truckloads of meat products were now unable to enter Canada and, you know, end up on the Canadian family's dinner table. That was a bit suspicious. And also, you know, this was tried in Australia a few months ago, several months ago. More recently, the truckers in Italy tried this as well, and it didn't work. What was one of the immediate effects of these was empty supermarket shelves and families going without because, you know, there's been a trucker blockade. And one of the direct results of that was empty supermarket shelves. So who wins in the end with this sort of strategy?
Right.
So that was one of the main reasons why I sort of sat down and just try to organize
another reason why it may not work is, as you have pointed out, these are mostly owner operators. The regime keep the supply lines running with employee truckers, right? They have, and people were saying, oh, 60% of Canadian truckers are Sikhs. I don't know if the number is exact, and they were boasting about this, and I'm like, yeah, this is not a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. If you're edging white men out of trucking, right, this is one of the few places in the West, at least, where people say to themselves, oh, we can always have trucking. This gives us power. We control supply lines. No, you don't.
Yeah. No, I didn't include it in my essay, but I did actually have the screenshot ready. I forget exactly what is the acronym or the initials, but basically the organization, the National Organization of Truckers of Canada, is all about, you know, importing the new generation of truckers from third world countries and replacing the white Canadian trucker. So again, like, there's a lot of suspicious and nefarious actors at play here. And I mentioned in the essay, you know, Elon Musk, Joe Rogan, and Jordan Peterson all vociferously voicing their support. Right. Now, Elon Musk is a guy who has a fleet of, and in his words, trucks which will be fully autonomous, lined up and ready to go. What is he doing throwing in his support to this trucker convoy? And I don't think we need to go too much into Jordan Peterson's sort of iffy personality and his iffy motives and goals. And
I think he just needs more drug money.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we have a sort of truism in the dissident right, which is when we talk about our opponents, you know, they like to call themselves the resistance, but they are backed by every important institution, corporation, organization, celebrities, etc. So can you really call yourself the resistance when you have that much help? And we're suspicious of them for that, and we mock them for that. So the same principle should be applied to us, even if it makes us a bit upset and sad, because, you know, we would like to see some meaningful resistance to this. But when you've got Elon Musk, Jordan Peterson, and Joe Rogan offering such energetic support for these truckers, we should analyze that. We should reflect on that, especially, you know, Jordan Peterson and Elon Musk. And people might think that Elon Musk is based because he says some cool things on Twitter and he might have some cool ideas and he's made some great meme material. But this is a guy who is weeks away probably from launching human trials of Neuralink, which that's a huge step on the path towards transhumanism.
If that is so, I've heard reports that 15 of 23 monkeys have died from the Neuralink implant. So who knows?
Yeah, like I'm not a fan of this. I don't like the transhumanist agenda. I'm opposed to it. I will be opposed to it. So if someone who is a massive funder and pusher of the transhumanist future starts throwing in his support for this trucker movement, I'm going to be suspicious of that. And also the fact that he's got a fleet of autonomous trucks lined up and ready to go and to replace the human truck driver. So it's like there's reason for suspicion here, for skepticism, as you put it.
There is a, you know, he has a pecuniary motive in showing that truckers are unruly. Trucking without truckers. Thankfully, I don't think that his self-driving vehicles are actionable, but that has not stopped forced implementation of technology in the past. Right, so that might be something to think about. And as regimes in the West become less and less competent, we should expect them to be more and more beholden to oligarchs and find themselves forced to implement their faulty technology. So that's something to think about. Now, you've been talking in your essay about King Pyrrhus of Epirus and about Fabius Cunctator, Fabian mm-hmm. the Delayer, mm-hmm. right? The two strategies. But I will, from just what we talked about here, I will invoke the one last great Mediterranean figure, Niccolo Machiavelli, right?
Yes.
He teaches us to never inflict upon the enemy a small injury, because a small injury gives motivation and moral cover to the enemy. Now, and I was thinking about this, right? I was seeing it, people laughing at people who weren't able to sleep, whose babies were being woken up, people who were actually starting to lose their minds from the constant honking in mm-hmm. Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And people were saying, oh, the honking is driving the libs mad. Now, first of all, how do you know that those are libs, liberals, right? How do you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe those people are apolitical in Ottawa. You know, I know. Major metropolitan area, capital city of a country. Yes, probably the majority of the population is left-wing.
Mm-hmm.
However, first of all, not all of them are. Second of all, some of them are right-wing. Like, I am a far-right white nationalist, but I live in the downtown area of a capital city of a country, which is very liberal. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the very few people, not to toot my own horn, but who can make things happen and is right-wing. Right,
mm-hmm.
You seriously don't want to piss me off if you have right wing galls, mm-hmm. and the human animal is spiteful. The human animal will do things out of spite. If you deprive people of sleep and comfort, because sleep deprivation is a torture method. Let's not mm-hmm. fucking kid ourselves here. It was used in Guantanamo Bay. It was used by the American federal government in Waco, Texas. And the thing is, right, and people who live in downtown Ottawa, even if they're not on your side, they're not people you want to piss off. There's a very small amount of people in this world who can fuck you up over a slight. Mm-hmm. Many of them live in downtown Ottawa. That's all I'm going to say about
that. Yeah, good point, yes.
When you go out and you honk your horn and you annoy people and you keep them sleep deprived, yes, it's going to lead to some very funny memes about, haha, the libs are going crazy because of the honking. But that is the very definition of a small injury.
Yes.
You've deprived these people of sleep for how many? 7 days? Mm-hmm. They can seriously fuck you up. These are not anyone.
I mentioned that in my article. I said, right. You know, imagine you were just a young couple, recently parents, recently made parents, and you're just trying to put your baby to sleep. And the decibels from these honking truckers are shaking the windows, and your baby is waking up terrified at 3 o'clock in the morning. And the way I put it in my essay was, I would be hard pressed to not go out to those truckers with a baseball bat in my hand.
Yep.
Like, you're pissing me off, because, and like I said, again, if at the end of the day, as we are speaking, the police are clearing them out, this has literally been sound and fury signifying nothing. They've done nothing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking about the small injury, I mentioned this in my Telegram as well. Like, if we lived in serious times, if we lived in 1722 or 1822 or even 1922 instead of 2022, these truckers would have stormed a military barracks, looted the munitions, and then attacked Parliament armed to the teeth. That's how things would have been done in serious times. These guys have just been having a party in the streets. I shared a video on my Telegram of like a Sikh Indian was dancing on some guy's shoulder. Yeah, and someone's got a big big amp and they're playing like some sort of Indian dance music and it's all ha ha hee hee. Yeah, the guy.
The Sikh, oh my God.
The Sikh is on his friend's shoulders and he's got like a hockey stick. And the music like diddling 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 diddling, and everyone's dancing. All these white Canadians are laughing and they're filming it with their phones, and it's all so cool and funny. And yeah, and look, we're not racist. Look, we've got our based Sikh guy here, and I share them. It's like we're not in serious times. We are not in serious times, and this is not a serious attempt to fight for freedom. It's just, you know, that might make some people upset, but. And I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert on Julius Evola or Evelyn philosophy, but when we have been talking about Julius Evola for such a long time, and very clever people have put in a lot of work to clarify and simplify Evelyn philosophy, that's not entertainment. Like, you should learn from what they are telling you and apply that. And when we say, like, ride the tiger, and we talk about civilizational decline, this is what we're talking about. Evola says, you can't resist, neither directly or indirectly, the forces of civilizational decay. You can't resist them. So if you think that you're going to have these sort of like, you know, Easter rising rebellious displays, like it's the, you know, 100 or 200 years ago, like storming of the Bastille, but you're not going all in, you're not really storming the Bastille, you're not really storming the GPO, you're not really storming the Parliament of Ottawa, then
just to be clear, Pox, I'm sorry for interrupting you. We are not advocating for anyone to do that.
No. And I want
to. We are just saying that in times
I'm only saying that in comparison with other attempts of other things.
Nor do we mean to imply that any non-violent protest is illegitimate.
Yes,
an illegitimate expression of woes. I just want to get the legal stuff out of the way. Honest, we are not advocating revolution.
I
should have said, violence,
I don't mean to Fed post or anything. All I'm saying is comparative historical analysis. In other times, this would have ended with more serious action. Whereas nowadays, we're in a different paradigm. You could even say it's because we're in the age of Aquarius or whatever you want to call it. We're in a different age and things are done in a different way. So if you're what I'm saying is, if you're expecting to see sort of epic Hollywood showdown or Braveheart style freedom and all that sort of thing, that's not going to happen right now because we're in very unserious and decaying civilizational times. But of course, I would not advocating for armed revolution in Ottawa.
We are obviously not advocating for armed revolution in Ottawa. That would be just silly, you know.
Yes.
We are, however, saying that I'm going to now Fed post worse than you are. There is an old French saying. I think it's French. It could be from another country. When you strike at the king, strike to kill. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another thing. I think it's a corollary to Machiavelli's never deal your enemy a small injury, right?
Right.
Because when you deal your enemy a small injury, you give him motivation. You know, aside from just being your enemy, now he's out for revenge. And you give him moral cover because now you've struck at him, he's going to strike back. The people looking on are saying, well, you know, both sides are to blame. That's the way to do it. And the French say, when you strike at the king, strike to kill. Now, truckers have run Trudeau out of Ottawa. They have blocked the Windsor Bridge, which the chat tells me 25% of trade between America and Canada goes through that bridge. So that's maybe not a small injury.
Yeah.
People are saying not hurting the system. The problem is that it's hurting common folk, and it could turn common folk against the truckers. This is like a liability. People are saying I should address the concerns of the chat, which is very pro-trucker right now. I want to make clear, guys, that neither myself nor Pox are anti-trucker, but we have questions, right? We have our doubts about not the motivations of the truckers themselves, but some of the organizers and the boosters. We have doubts about the effectiveness of this protest, and we have doubts. We are basically making the comparison. I have myself looked into the psychology of people who like protesting. I've been to protests in my life. I love protesting, if I'm being honest, especially if I'm with friends. And unless we're, if it's an optics sensitive protest, we don't do it. But there's nothing really better than getting a few beers with your friends and chanting, saying "fuck the prime minister" and "the president's wife is a whore." And, these things are usually true. I'm sorry, I had a brain.
I would just say that I agree with the 25% of commerce going through that bridge. Okay. Qui bono? Who do you think can hold out longer? Canadian families or the Canadian state, the Canadian government? The fat cats or the working class? Who do you think is going to suffer more from having empty supermarket shelves and having to go without certain staple food items that they usually buy to feed their children? So, like I said, who is winning here? Who is the beneficiaries of these of this Pyrrhic victory that has resulted in so many casualties, but ultimately then ends up being more like a defeat? And also, supply chain breakdowns and shortages of essential items were going to happen, and in some parts of the world are already happening and have been happening for quite some time. But now, because of this trucker situation, and we might even have to call it a fiasco if it all ends in a defeat, there's a direct line now that any spin doctor, any PR expert, any politician who's a puppet of the globalist can draw a direct line from the action of the truckers to the discontent family with empty supermarkets and empty dinner tables.
Right.
Or other prime material, that is essential for an economy, society. They have a perfect scapegoat. Whether or not this stuff was already happening doesn't matter. Now they can just say, well, look, the reason why you have to go without some minced meat, or the reason why you can't buy lumber at the price that you'd usually do, and now it's 25, 50% more expensive at the lumber yard or whatever, is because, well, for almost an entire week, we've had a trucker blockade that caused a massive supply chain breakdown. Yeah, and the fat cats are going to be bothered by this.
At some point, someone's going to have to point out that first of all, the lumber price increase in North America has been 300%.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I don't know how that's even possible, but it happened. Yeah. And this is 5 month old news. I think this 300%.
Crazy.
I think some point when winter started, maybe November, this was when the price spiked to 300%. So we should probably point out, deconstruct the elite narrative, which is going to come. But it remains true that this is one danger. Which will that's the thing. The supply chains are fragile. Like the world global supply chains are very fragile, and just people shut the insane economic shutdowns that were imposed due to the coronavirus have injured these very fragile supply lines. Now what's going on is that the globalists are going to have a scapegoat, and
it's sort of like
I think
sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. Okay.
It's sort of like how online censorship and criminalization of dissident right-wing opinion was already something that existed well before January 6th. But look at how much easier it was to implement more censorship and more criminalization of dissident right-wing thought and behavior because of January 6th. So the fact that these fragile systems were already suffering immensely, and in many cases worryingly so. I've been paying attention to this too. I didn't know that the lumber prices in North America had gone up 300%, but I have been paying attention to this stuff, and it has been very disconcerting. And that's why when I started seeing truckers protesting, truckers blockading in Canada, they tried it in Australia, they tried it in Italy, now they're doing it in Canada. How convenient at a time when the powers that be are trying to implement a great reset and trying to, as the Rockefellers put it, you know, reset our table and trying to restrict our access to protein and red meat and all these sorts of things. And they want a complete reset of basically every aspect of industry, economy, and our way of life. And now here come all these trucker blockades around the world serving the purpose of creating more supply line breakdown. And it's just like, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, look at the world as it is. Who benefits from a week-long trucker blockade? Who? And also, like, if you're still not convinced, the guy who's in charge of the GoFundMe, which got over like $10 million of donations, is literally a gay Jewish activist. Like, literally. Okay? And he's been using that, he's been using his position as the money man, basically, the guy in charge of money, to direct the energies of this protest. He can make them do whatever he wants. He's the money man. He's the guy controlling the GoFundMe. And, you know, it's a total conservatard fiasco. The Canadian Tories are trying to jump on board. All these grifters are there. And I understand that people want something to be done. And they say, like, well, what's your solution? Or, well, at least they're doing something. Well, doing something just for the sake of doing something is a very desperate mentality. And you're not going to achieve very good results if that's your motivating forces. Let's just do something.
Yeah, there is an expression in programming. When you fuck up, stop thrashing, right? When you, it's like a bear caught in a trap. The worst thing it can do is do something, anything. Really starts thrashing around. You're going to injure yourself more.
Yeah,
we're gonna get to that. We're gonna get to the gay Jew, and no, we're not talking about Milo for once. I have this expression that the religion of America, and here I include Canada, is Judeo-homosexualism. So this guy's basically a walking miracle. But we have donations on Entropy, and the chat is very vigorous on DLive, less so on Odyssey. So we actually have some people insulting us on Odyssey, but that's okay. We're not going to ban you for disagreement. We have a donation from ABC for 10 American dollars. And he says, TD Bank just froze two personal accounts into which $1.1 million was paid in support of the truckers. A GoFundMe page was taken down in February after it reached $10 million. No court injunctions were issued beforehand. TD only appealed to the Superior Court after taking the action. Is this legal? I'm sorry I cannot answer that question, ABC. Thank you for your donations, but you're going to have to talk to someone who practices law in Canada.
If I may respond to that, I'm not going to give any legal expertise on that, but to those who might be insulting us, there's why you should be skeptical. Because, for example, I'm not in Canada. You're not in Canada. Anyone else who is not in Canada, what ways of supporting the truckers do you have? You can either give your money to GoFundMe. You can get on Getter and give Getter all your details, this honey trap, all your details. Or you can give messages of moral support. And if you are a content creator, you can sort of endorse the truckers to your subscribers or your followers. Okay, I'm not going to give my money to GoFundMe. I'm not going to give my money to GoFundMe, a GoFundMe account controlled by a gay Jewish activist. I'm not going to join Getter and follow the truckers on Getter. And I have serious concerns about the functionality and coherency and objectives of this movement, so I'm not going to endorse them to my followers. But that doesn't mean that we are anti-truckers. That doesn't mean we're anti-resisting the system. But there are other ways of doing it which are wiser given the time that we're in. And it doesn't make you a coward or whatever. It means you're using your wits. It means you're being intelligent and also learning from past mistakes and disastrous mistakes, like, for example, what happened in January in Washington of last year. So to anyone who might be getting their knickers in a twist about this, let me at least be perfectly clear. I'm not suggesting that all you should do is sit at home and complain and scratch your balls. But when you are going to take action, you better know what you're getting yourself into. You better have some objectives that can be achieved. You better make some demands. Like, did the truckers actually ever demand to negotiate with anyone and like sit down and come to an agreement and have some of their demands met in some way? Or did they just stand outside, you know, dancing with Sikhs and blaring their horns?
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at the idea of dancing with a Sikh.
Yeah, it's just like...
I mean, my mother used to watch these Indian soaps, and I'm unfortunately very familiar with, you know, Indian dancing.
Yes, you can imagine the music and the dancing and everything, yeah. So, I mean, and there you go. So exactly, what happened? They donated all this money to GoFundMe, and then GoFundMe just says, fuck you. No, we're freezing that campaign. And you're not getting your money back. We're going to extra lol, double lol. We're going to give it to BLM and diversity causes and all stuff like that. So like,
yeah, I think that they rescinded that because that's actually theft. That's larceny. That's theft. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think that even the regime is ready to go that far. Apparently Trudeau wouldn't meet them. And they were, okay. So I'm just scanning the regular chat on both. So JQ and Abridged, I've seen an accusation in the DLive chat box, if you would defend yourself against it, if you can, that you have called on people not to bring up the JQ too much in a previous video. Is this true?
No. What I said is you can't allow yourself to suffer JQ derangement syndrome. There is a moment where you might become so obsessed with the JQ that it actually clouds your judgment and also forms an obstacle that impedes you from perhaps winning some victories in this struggle that we're in. And so, for example, I mentioned the Unce Review and Ron Unce as an example. So here's a J. Are you going to say that we shouldn't work with Ron Unce or publish articles on the Unce Review or utilize some of the data, the publications and things that he's and his the writers and his employee have published? That just seems very unwise. And why are you doing that? Because you have JQ derangement syndrome. But yeah. I don't think that the JQ is an insignificant matter. It's immensely significant. It's hugely important. So no, I don't say that it's not important or you shouldn't talk about it. You should be wise about when to talk about it and with whom. In the same video, I said what I've been saying for a long time in many videos is that we need to act like rebels in occupied territory, because that's basically what we are. And if you were, for example, an Irishman in 1916 British occupied Dublin, you wouldn't be standing on the street corner saying, fuck the British, get out of my country. You're all a bunch of roast beefs, get out of here. And you wouldn't be spitting in the faces of the British soldiers. Otherwise, you wouldn't make it. And so if you're living nowadays and you're, you know, spraying K bombs and N bombs and you're basically spurging out about the JQ in people's chats or on their channels in the comment section or whatever, or amongst even people in, that you're trying to win over philosophically or rhetorically, you're not going to have much success, and you're jeopardizing the leaders and the members of movements who are trying to resist as best they can the globalist regime that we're all opposed to. So I was just saying, you know, I was just encouraging wiser behavior, basically.
Right. So what you're saying is that you're a Jew-loving cuck, okay? That has been
yes, yes. Just in short, just to sum up, what I'm saying is...
yes. Vox Populi confirmed small hat wearer and kisser of the wall. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. Okay, we understand the Jewish question. No need to repeat it 100,000 times. People will, you know, but that's the thing. There is a moment in your process of red pilling someone when you understand that they are ready for the JQ. I think people are saying always the JQ is the final red pill. I don't think it is. There's even red pills even deeper than that, some of which mm-hmm. we do not fully understand, mm-hmm. but it is pretty high up there. Yeah. Like you need to be like a level 30 racist minimum.
Yeah, I mean, from personal experience, for me,
in the Western context, like even normies in Eastern Europe are like, yeah, the Jews, they control everything, fuck them. But then they tell you that racism is bad. Yeah. So it depends on your location.
Yeah, I mean, I just, speaking for myself in my sort of red pill journey, I remember that, yeah, World War II truths, finding out a lot of the lies that we've been told and that entails, that was quite difficult and uncomfortable because a lot of notions are challenged when you start pulling back the layers of misconceptions and lies and misinformation and propaganda and history that was written by the victors, all that sort of thing. Yeah, it can be a bit uncomfortable. It's a difficult pill to swallow, but you know, if you're intellectually honest with yourself and rigorous with yourself, you've got to press on and just get over it. But you also have to remember how difficult that was for you, and that just, you know, understand that other people are going to feel that way too. And so you have to be clever about this. You have to be wise about this. You have to be a bit empathetic. And sometimes those are qualities that might be lacking in our little Cosa Nostra. And also you just have to be sensible, have some common sense when you're in someone's chat or when you're on a chat, you know, a comment section. You know, don't jeopardize your favorite online thinker or entertainer, dissident entertainer, whatever. Don't jeopardize that by spurging out and throwing all this language around that you know can get people banned and you know can get channels shut down. So just behave, basically, you know.
Take the lessons we learned from Machiavelli about doing the enemy a small injury, or, you know, never. It's like people ask me, how have you kept your Twitter profile all these years? And I say, I don't argue with the leftists. Mm-hmm. I think the first time I got banned from Twitter was I told one EU politician to go fuck it, to go hang himself, right? And you learn that basically, is he going to do it? No. So why bother? No.
Do you know why I got my first ban? Mm. Because I called Dinesh D'Souza retarded. Do you know who he is?
I know who Dinesh D'Souza is, and you're 100% right in his.
And I got, I'm like, Instaband. Like, the second that tweet went out, I got a notification saying your account has been suspended. I think it was because I must have used the R word. But yeah, that was.
But it is a very accurate description of Dinesh D'Souza, right?
Yeah.
If you have any doubt that we live in clown world, right? Clown world is a charitable term. I think we are living in some sort of evil reality. Like this, if it's a clown world, it's the world of the It Clown from the Stephen King novel. We live in a world where a nobody, like a worm, like Dinesh D'Souza, got Sam Francis deplatformed. Sam Francis is an intellectual titan. Mm-hmm. Right? He's one of the great thinkers of the West, of Western political thought. And Dinesh D'Souza was able to muscle him out of all of these publications. This is the world we live in. Let that sink in.
Clown world is not harsh enough to describe a world where that is possible. It's like the inversion of Greco-Roman ideals of heroism or like Norse Germanic ideals of honesty. It's just been totally inverted, and now the winners are the slimy, the mischievous, the liars. And like I was saying earlier, you can't resist much. You can't, neither directly or indirectly, you can't resist these forces. These are the symptoms of civilizational decay. You can just do what you must to survive and thrive as best as possible and ride this out. That's you know, basically all we can do. For example, you know, even so, something near and dear to me has just been completely defiled, and that's the Lord of the Rings. And there is nothing I can do to stop what Amazon has done to the Lord of the Rings. I can't do anything about that. Now, if I were to complain about it, if I were to point out why is this anti-European, why is this white erasure, and point that out, you know, I expect someone to say, well, what's your solution then? You're just going to complain? Well, yeah, because that's all I can do. And I will use this as a moment to teach others about the realities of white erasure and anti-European sentiment that is everywhere in our culture. And I will use this as a perfect example, because it's so blatantly obvious and so disgusting that you can't avoid it. So it's a perfect opportunity to get my message across to more people, and in a very effective way. But can I change what Amazon has done? No. And so this whole thing of like, what's your solution? We need to do something, blah, blah, blah. It's the same kind of thing that I see with, you know, like with the Canadian truckers or the January 6th protest. Well, at least they did something. Okay. But what was the end result? And was it good for us or bad for us? And, you know, one of the harsh realities is that we do live in clown world. But again, that's not hard enough of a term. We live in something worse than clown world, as you said, and you need to understand that soon and act accordingly.
It's Nietzsche called it transvaluation. The evil shall become good, the good evil. The heroic shall become hated, the hated heroic. When I think about someone like Dinesh D'Souza, he's just a disgusting person in every way. A slimy, dishonest person. People are pointing out he went to prison for fraud.
That's right. Yes. Yes. Lest we forget. Yes. Yes.
And he tries to spin it as, persecution by the libtards. No, he actually defrauded people.
Mm-hmm. Cancel culture is so bad as he's canceling people, you know.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Douglas Murray did something similar not too long ago.
Yes, I am fully aware of all of these slimy creatures. Like, and speaking of Conservative Inc., we have one last donation to address from Gadius Maximus. He says, every popular uprising/movement gets grifters that come out of the woodwork. It's a byproduct of going in the right direction. He gives us $10. And I think this is the perfect segue into the gay Jew holding the GoFundMe campaign question. We are talking, of course, about B.J. Dichter, and that is his preferred way of presenting himself.
Yes.
B.J., you know, blowjob Dichter. Yep. Unless it's, for the folks in the back who are hard
for the,
of hearing.
For the young audience who might not know.
Yeah, for all of the incels, there is the sexual act, which is called... I'm sorry. this is an intellectual show. But we do have fun here on the writer's block. They don't call it a writer's block. You know how to get out of a writer's block? Get a block, smash it against your head. That's very fun. You can get unblocked very fast. Side effects may include death. B.J. Dichter, gay Jew, not a trucker, a jewel grinder, I believe. Member of the Conservative Party.
Yep.
2015 candidate for one of the Toronto ridings, I believe, in Canada for a member of parliament. Jihad watcher, you know, counter jihad person.
Mm-hmm.
So on a scale from glows in the dark to, you know, Mossad agent, how suspect is this guy?
Exactly, exactly. It's when I saw that he was involved and that he was in charge of the GoFundMe campaign of all things too, and how important and what a vast sum of money that is or was, you know, if that didn't ring alarm bells, what are you doing? What are you doing if that didn't ring some alarm bells? And, you know, going back to the person who made the donation, I agree that every major movement or attempt to resist will attract grifters. Nothing will be perfect. I'm not demanding perfection. I'm simply saying that you need to understand these risks. And if you have the benefit of being at a distance, analyze them, evaluate them, identify them, and then make your decisions accordingly. Like I said, I'm not in Canada. So my options to support the truckers were what I said earlier, donate to the GoFundMe campaign or endorse them to my followers. And also get on Getter, right? And join the honey trap, the honeypot. And I was looking at analyzing the facts and the characters involved in this. And I see that there's this guy, BJ Dichter, literally a gay Jewish activist, in charge of the GoFundMe campaign. And so, no, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to be giving my money to the truckers' GoFundMe campaign, because that's just too much of an alarm bell. And this guy is such a conservatard cuck. It's painfully obvious. What did you expect? And, you know, then I've seen him in some interviews where it's all basically, you know, it's the gay rainbow allegiance, but for the Tories. And it's all like, you know, the Dems are the real racists. And look here, I've got a based Black Canadian on my right. I've got a white Canadian woman on my left. I'm a gay Jew, and we're all here to support the truckers. And it's like, okay, great. Yeah, that's fine. But in what way does that represent dissident causes and dissident values? And should I not be concerned that that guy isn't in charge of the money and in charge of the GoFundMe campaign? Well, I think I am right to be concerned about that. And I'm right to withhold my donation. And that might make people upset and make people think that, oh, I don't support the truckers. Well, the risk and benefit analysis was heavier on the risk side. I don't think that that man and that GoFundMe campaign passed the smell test.
Great. I think if we did not learn the gay Jew lesson from Milo Yiannopoulos, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
we cannot keep walking into these traps.
Yes, that's what movement. I'm saying. All I'm saying is learn from past mistakes, please. Right. And because we do want honest resistance to this stuff. We do want and need. And I understand that I think the reason why the truckers garnered so much support and people were standing out in, you know, freezing temperatures to show them their support and giving them food and giving them gasoline and all that stuff is almost also because of the relief that finally someone is doing something and someone is rising up, and not just someone, thousands of people, and not just ordinary people who might actually have some say, some influence in bringing the government to the negotiation table. So I understand that. But what I'm saying is, when we live in a time of civilizational decay, and, you know, if we are going to always be talking about how the dysgenics of society and the falling IQs and the normies and all that stuff, does it not follow then that we should be cautious about joining movements full of dysgenic low IQ normies? Like, that's all I'm saying. And this isn't just a low risk situation. Like, if you gave your money to GoFundMe, there was a liberal Canadian politician, some foreigner, actually, he's like another Indian guy, was saying that the Canadian government was basically sucking up all the data of the people who donated, and he thinks that they should be prosecuted for financing terrorism. Okay, so if you make unwise, spur of the moment decisions because you think, you know, it's great, yeah, let's BTFO the libtards with the honking, ha ha ha, here's $10 to the GoFundMe campaign, well, now you might be potentially investigated and punished for financing terrorism. Look at the January 6th, the consequences for some of the people there. They thought they were going to just, you know, protest the fraudulent election. And they were, you know, in some cases ushered into the building by the police. There was no problem. Everything's fine. Yeah, this is all within your rights of the, you know, the First Amendment. And now they're sitting in solitary confinement. So if you're going to participate in these things, or if you're going to, you know, give financial support or things like that, you need to learn from past mistakes. And you need to understand that, you know, this might have consequences, because we are in a struggle here. And so we need to be a bit more serious about this. And so, yes, I understand we want something to be done. And we want to meaningfully resist this regime. But there's nothing wrong in using your wits and being cautious when caution is called for.
The thing that first got me doubting the trucker convoy was really the presence of this dysgenic, disgusting gay Jewish person, BJ Dichter. You know, I've been calling him Benjamin Dichter, but from what I understand, he prefers to be called BJ. I mean, the jokes just write themselves. Here's this gay Jew Canadian trucker. His name is BJ. It's also his job description. Yeah. Well, okay, I'm sorry. We're going to back to maturity now. And I've said for some time now in my dissident career, in my, you know, being an online racist, our primary enemy are not the libtards. Our primary enemy is the mainstream right. Right? Mm-hmm. We used to have something. There was something for the whippersnappers who may not remember the ancient time known as 2016. We had something called the alt-right. Now, it's not German for old, right? And it's not alt-right. It's alt. It stands for alternative right, right? It was a good term until, you know, a certain smarmy person from, I'm just talking about Richard Spencer here, wiped his ass on the term and, you know, shat all over it. But it meant that we are an alternative to the mainstream right. Well, now, what's the mainstream right? It's a gigantic flaming pile of shit. This is the most charitable description I can give of conservatism, libertarianism, all these things. It's turd after turd after gay Jewish turd, right? I think that if you're a member of the of any conservative, mainstream conservative organization, you're not going to make it. You're an accomplice to the crime perpetrated against white people and against Western civilization.
Absolutely. Yep.
And these people exist to suck the air out of distant space. They were specifically made for this. And I recommend people watch Keith Woods' video about the formation of National Review and modern American conservatism, how old school, you know, H.L. Mencken conservatism and Charles Lindbergh, Father Coughlin, American First Populism were just swept aside by this CIA op, which was National Review, and just people were funneled into dead-end operations like the John Birch Society, like the conservative movement, stuff like this. People are saying, oh, rhinos, they're Republicans. And this is not a new phenomenon. Conservatism has been an op from the start. It's not just any op. It's an intelligence op, a CIA psyop on the American population. Something like so.
Continue.
Right. So basically, the specific purpose of this op is to draw people away from movements like maybe H.L. Mencken style conservatism, which was, for states' rights against interventionism, or, you know, America First type. I mean the movement of Charles Lindbergh and Father Coughlin, which is maybe, you know, for a vigorous, strong federal government, but it is likewise very strongly anti-interventionist, very populist, and all these things. And this was the original purpose of conservatism. This is still its purpose. It exists to defeat stuff we like: populism, non-interventionism, white identity politics, saving Western civilization. It serves to protect interests we hate: oligarchical, whatever the fuck you call the system, Zionism, and of course to safeguard the latest ground won by liberalism. Well, here's the conservative case for legalizing pedophilia.
Yeah,
you're gonna hear that.
Oh, yeah.
In 10 years, you're going to hear the conservative case for giving your children to the pedophile mafia. And it's going to be very well argued by the usual suspects, as the Z-Man would like to call them. And so these people are, I would say, the enemy. I think of the libtards as a force of nature. Like the libtards will always be with us. They are a force for evil. They are like the devil, you know. I'm a Christian. I believe in sin, right? I believe that sin is inherent to the human animal. But I think that through God's grace, we can transcend sin. We can, in as much as it is possible, try to avoid it, be forgiven for our sins, right? Mm-hmm. But I see conservatism as the guy who's telling you, sin's okay. Come, let's commit a little lust, maybe with each other. You know, that's what the cool kids are doing right now. And
yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ, man. It's so this is the enemy, right? This is the person who's trying to disable your defenses against evil. And so yes. I find that these people are viler. And I cannot bring myself to support them in any way anymore. Mm-hmm. So my new heuristic is, if it helps mainstream rightists, if it helps the conservative movement, it is evil, right? So I see the Canadian Tories, they're trying to get out ahead of this protest, Canadian protest, even though they support the vaccine mandates. This is something to keep in mind. The Canadian Conservative Party supports the vaccine mandates, right? I don't know about their specific positions because I don't follow Canadian politics all that closely, but my good friend Endeavor has, you know, Boat Boy. Shout out to Boat Boy. He's oot and a boot. That's a joke there because he's literally a boot, a boat, in Canadian, right? he's a mad moose loose a boot the hoose and just knocking it out of the park lately. But he's pointed this out to me and to everyone on his Telegram channel that only two major Canadian politicians, Maxime Bernier and the other guy, have been against the vax mandate. And
I shared a video that a trucker made on my Telegram. I imagine this video went viral enough. It's about 5 minutes long, and he even said that the title in his video was like, "I'm uncomfortable truths." You know, I'm an honest man. I was raised to say things, even if it's going to make people upset, that you should always speak the truth. And so he says, "I'm going to say some things that might make you upset." And he actually even says the things that we're talking about here. That the movement has become infested with grifters and Tories. Mm. And they are...
But he repeats himself.
Yeah. And they are redirecting and rechanneling the energies and the motivations of the truckers into something that benefits the Tories, into something that benefits the mainstream conservatives. Yeah. And he is really hacked off about it, understandably so. And that... that it's upsetting. I wish that would not happen. So we need to be, you know, those of us who are not in Canada, or those of us who might, you know, something might arise in the country you live in. And we need to be very Machiavellian about these things. You know, we need to be very clever about these things and realize, okay, but does this have the potential to become a tool in the hands of these mainstream conservatives? Okay, that potential is, as the person who donated said, you know, it's always there. So you can't just like, you know, force that, you know, make you stay on the sofa all day. But it's something to keep in mind. And when you see a movement that didn't take necessary precautions to resist the mainstream conservatives, or had mainstream conservatives already leading it, like the BJ guy. He was already there. He wasn't some new guy that just sort of straggled on and took control. He was there from, you know, pretty much day one, in charge of the GoFundMe campaign and everything. So when you see that the mainstream conservatives are pulling the strings, you've got to be more cautious, and you've got to start being critical of it, even if it's not ideal. Yes, we would have liked to see some meaningful resistance to the global homo and flu world order. We would have loved to see it. But once it becomes crawling with you know, mainstream conservatives and Tories and, you know, whatever country they're called, that's a bad sign, because like you describe them perfectly. They're horrible. They're horrible. And I noticed early on as I was making,
they're the, you know, you're familiar with the concept of a Judas goat, right?
Like the scapegoat.
It's a goat they have with the cattle as they're being slaughtered to calm them down as they're walking down the slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. Conservatives are the Judas goats of white people. And of the working class, and of conservative Christians, anywhere, conservative pagans too, basically.
Yeah. I didn't plan on this, but when I started making videos, you know, back in 2018, I made like a half a dozen or so videos. I started realizing that almost every video I was making was to a normie conservative audience. I wasn't making, you know, like get wrecked SJW videos, and I never really wanted to do that because it just like everyone else was doing that, and it seems like just too easy. So I started realizing that I was opening up the webcam and talking to the camera, and as I was thinking of themes to talk about, it was almost always to the mainstream conservative audience, and I was making critiques not of the, you know, the far left SJW types. I was making critiques of mainstream conservative ideology and politics, because that is actually our true enemy. It's like, you have an enemy, and then you have a traitor. Right. The traitor is always worse than your honest enemy, than your arch rival. The traitor is always worse. And these conservatives that are in our way are just treacherous. They're just traitors. And we have to be very wary of them, and wherever they appear, that's just the way it is.
That's, people are, I see, objections in the chat from Beerhall Pooch. Thank you for watching the show, Pooch. He says that truckers and YouTubers are calling out BJ, and so the truckers know they're being co-opted. Good. This doesn't really change anything. So I'm going to show off my political chops here. This is not my first rodeo. There was a protest here in Macedonia. I think it was last year. It was May. It was, I did not participate in it as a protester. I went there in a journalistic capacity to live stream from it live. But again, right, you feel that energy. Oh, there's like many of us, and we can do, you feel powerful when you're in a massive crowd of people. Right. Mm-hmm. And this was a mainstream conservative protest, so they didn't exactly hate me. Right. So it's one of those things, you know, the people doesn't, many of them recognize me from my Macedonian language show. They were very warm to me. But I opposed to this protest being attended by people because for similar reasons, I saw the mainstream conservative party here organizing it, having all these Judas goats prepared. And I said to them, look, what's going to happen is you're coming out for a cause. It's very noble. This cause of yours is very noble. What's going to happen is your numbers are going to be instrumentalized by the conservatives, who are the enemy, I will reiterate. Mm-hmm. And they will frame your protest as support for them. And this is something I'm sure you agree we do not want to happen. You want, the protest was to release some political prisoners, which are held here. And then what happened is the protest, I was disappointed how many people were there. And I was disappointed by how many fans of my show were there, because so they didn't listen to me. And then people were giving speeches, and The speeches given were all, we call for, early parliamentary elections because the government sucks, you know. There was very little mention of the political prisoners themselves. And I said to people, here is how they're going to hijack your protest. You are coming out here. You're providing boots on the ground. This is what we're going to use. You are not going to be able to deconstruct their narrative in real time because you do not have their media footprint. And this is something, you know, I predicted, but it turned out I was wrong because I was there to deconstruct the media, and other independent journalistic types were there to deconstruct the narrative in real time. However, I think that at this point, we still do not have, and especially in the West, in Macedonia, it's a little different, but in the West, the alternative right, the dissident right, does not have the journalistic clout to deconstruct conservative ink narratives. We simply do not have the media megaphone of rebel media, for example, Ezra Levant, who has been very loud in supporting this this protest. And this is a problem. You know, even if you go out there with noble goals, you are not going to be able to fight off this massive and organized media and political narrative empire. Now, you could do that if we cultivate enough dissident media, right? But on the other hand, if the media gets too dissident, we lose our platforms. This is something to
exactly.
think about.
It's a very fine line. We're on a tightrope. And so it's, you know, I think perhaps you felt the same motivations to have this conversation was just because, you know, those of us who were skeptical were being accused of being, you know, cowardly or, you know, perfectionists or, you know, whatever. Right. But no, I think we just understand that we are on a tightrope and you do have to keep your wits about you. Right. And I just want to say, you know, that doesn't mean that I'm advocating for inaction. And if you read my essay, I do end by giving some examples of some successful strategies that actually did happen. And I think they're just more effective. So rather than amassing, you know, 70,000 truckers and a convoy that's over 75 kilometers long, and you attempt to have this massive pitched battle with the enemy that still, no matter how many people you amass, has more resources than you, more power than you, and you're going to still be rolling the dice. Instead, there's another way that has proven to be successful in various countries. And I gave one example in particular of a man in Australia who he has a normal day job, but he also runs a clothing line for like gym apparel. And his day job was going to force him to get injected or lose his job. And so he held his ground, and his gym bros rallied around him and supported him. And a bunch of people, you know, bought apparel from his clothing line and backed him up. And, you know, he probably had an important position in his day job as well, because he was able to stand his ground and negotiate with his employers. And they caved into his demands, and he was not forced to be injected in order to remain employed. And so I see that this is a more effective path. It is small scale action taken by individuals, but not individualistic movements. It's small scale action taken by individuals supported by their kin, supported by their brethren, supported by communal support in the area where they live. And each man or woman stands their ground, and their friends, their community, their clientele rally to support them and back them up. And basically, rather than, I gave them another sort of metaphor in the essay. So we're going up against this big machine, and the truckers represent everyone just sort of throwing themselves into the gears, crushing their bodies in the gears, but at least the machine breaks down because we've all thrown our bodies into the gears to be crunched and crushed and mangled by the gears of this monstrous machine. Okay.
That's assuming it's not a people crushing machine. It's not specifically made to crush people.
Yeah.
That's a big then, assumption we're making.
Yeah. And then exactly. And then, you know, it's like, you know, if the government really wanted to, they could have blocked the truckers on the motorway. They could have prevented them from getting to Ottawa in the first place. Like, there's so much about this. It's just like, what's going on here? But anyway, so the truckers are sort of representing this strategy of, let's all throw ourselves into the gears of this machine. Well, what if instead of doing that, we just shoved a spanner in the works? We just, you know, we just flipped a switch, one of the switches, discreetly. And slowly, we keep, you know, frustrating this machine and throwing in a spanner in the gears that causes one part of the machine to dysfunction or malfunction. And slowly, just like Fabian's strategy, you know, skirmishes, cutting off supply lines, do not engage the enemy in open pitch battle because they outnumber you and they are superior warriors. So you do these other hit and run tactics and you cut off the supply lines and you demoralize the enemy, frustrate your enemy. We could do with a bit of this too. And I've seen this happen in other places as well, where, you know, for example, I've got a friend who lives in a small town in Ireland. And, you know, the town has imposed, you know, the QR code verification systems, and you got to show your vax pass to go places. But all of the pub owners, they're not complying. They're just not forcing you to show it. And like, you know, it's a small town. Everyone kind of knows each other. They trust each other. It's a high trust community, and they're all fed up with this stuff. And so my friend, he's not injected, and he's been going out to the pubs and he's been enjoying life as normal. And none of the pub owners who know him, you know, on a first name basis, they know what his favorite pint is. They haven't been asking him to show it. And that's, I think, a great way, is to just sort of discreetly resist with these sort of small scale displays of defiance. And that's how you can achieve some victory. And it's actionable in your life. You can do this in your own. This is in your hands, rather than we need to get 70,000 truckers and shut down the economy for a week and throw our bodies into the gears of this machine, which, as you said, might be designed to crush our bodies. That, and we're basically doing it a favor. So, you know, I don't want to make it seem like I'm saying, no, just stay at home and you know, cry about stuff and complain. No, there is things that you can do, but you just have to be. You have to be very cold-blooded about this and you know, honest with yourselves about what can you do realistically against the forces that we are opposed to.
We have experience now with Russia. We have friends in Russia and who tell us that the Moscow mandates were defeated through simple non-compliance and non-enforceabilities. Now, I have some experience, you know, with the law, having been a lawyer for a very long time. And I tell you something, when a law is not enforceable, the state doesn't always take it off the books, mm-hmm. but at some point they simply give up on enforcing it. And this is a form of victory. This, if you insist that the state take the law off the books, they're probably not going to do it just to save face. But if they stop enforcing it, you know, that's a concession. It's a way for them to concede defeat without losing face. And losing face is very important to the ruling class. They really don't like doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Muscovites, exactly. You know, from Moscow, they defeated mask and vaccine mandates, I believe, just through non-compliance. And just through making these. We are getting excellent data from Russia about how people are being very defiant at the personal level, you know, non-compliant, but there are no protests. Although I hear that the Russian Truckers Union is called for a trucker protest. Now, this could be different. I called it, this could be the control group, right? Because we know that this is not a union protest in Canada. It's probably backed by the Conservative Party and elements of the counter-jihad movement. And whenever you see counter-jihad, I'm going to piss off the chat. There's always noses there. There's always elements of Israeli intelligence over there. Just keep that in mind. Every time someone is telling you to hate those Muslims, those Muslims are doing this, they're, you know, on the one hand, right, but on the other side, ask them to post foreskin or, you know, measure their nose or something. Or make sure you're talking to a good actor. And that's one of those, that's one of the good heuristics in life. I lost my train of thought.
You were talking about the Russians are going to do their own. Right. It looks like the Russians are gearing up to do their own trucker.
And I say this could be a control group of how this kind of protest unfolds in a country like Russia. Although I will say the trucker saga is not yet over. I hear Trudeau is massing the army to clear the Windsor Bridge.
Yeah, that
how do you think that's going to go?
So the last time I checked, I wanted to make sure I was up to date before we had this conversation. So honest to God, the last thing I read was that this already happened. That a highly militaristic police force. I videos were shared. They're rolling in tanks and camouflage. Like this isn't your ordinary cops on the beat. Has mobilized hours ago. This is like this morning European time, and so you know Canadian morning. I guess of yesterday, they were having this confrontation on the Ottawa Bridge, the Windsor Bridge, and clearing out the truckers. I think this already happened because. The last thing I read was, let me get, you know, I have it right here. Let me see. I'll just pull it up. Okay. Yeah. Washington Examiner. Canadian. I posted this at 11 o'clock at night, Central European time. So, you know, 24 hours ago, almost. Canadian police moved to disband trucker convoy at the Ambassador Bridge. Canadian police have begun to disband the trucker convoy on the Ambassador Bridge that connects Windsor, Ontario to Detroit. Acting on a judge's order to open the trade route. That's the first paragraph of the article. It's on my Telegram chat. It's the Washington Examiner. If I were to scroll down, you know, see what else it says here. It just describes what the protesters were doing. Actually, there's not much left. Okay, then it cites a tweet. Windsor Police. It says Windsor Police and its policing partners have commenced enforcement at and near the Ambassador Bridge. We urge all demonstrators to act lawfully and peacefully. Commuters are still being asked to avoid the areas affected by the demonstrations at this time. And this was posted at 2:18 p.m. I imagine that's Canadian time. Mm. So, yeah. For better or worse, it looks like the protesters are being, you know, cleared out. And I'm not sure that they actually, yeah. And I'm not sure we can say that they won anything. I'm not sure we can honestly say they achieved anything. I did mention at the start, for anyone who's joining late, I did say that the premier of Saskatchewan did put out a statement, which does seem to imply that Saskatchewan, at least, is responding in a way that we like to the trucker protest. And they are, according to the premier, planning on, they have a timeline that they're going to scrap all COVID restrictions and vaccine mandates and all the rest. And also the premier said in a statement that he hopes the federal government does something similar. So that's a win. That's a win. Right. So yeah.
But the protests were not in Saskatchewan.
Right? Exactly. From what I understand, there might've been like some offshoot, but from what I understand, this was mainly a concentration of truckers in Ottawa. They descended upon the Capitol. Now there might've been some truckers, you know, blockading the a border crossing at Saskatchewan as well or something like that. I know there was one in Alberta. The I guess they're called premiers in Canada. So the premier of Alberta said something too about like, hey, you know, please stop obstructing the Alberta border because we're being denied access to so much prime material that is essential for our economy, like lumber and mining, all that stuff. So can you please stop blockading the Alberta border? So there must have been some truckers in Alberta doing something. I couldn't say about Saskatchewan. I don't know.
Right. So I think we have addressed the question of what do you suggest we do, right? You've said it's less glorious to take local action. It's less glorious to engage in non-compliance, right, in local legalism than in these big flashy protests. I've counseled people not to do it. And here in Macedonia, we've had protests against lockdowns, against vaccinations. And one thing we've dealt with the Canadian truckers, they've not faced so much, is just the appearance of these infiltrators and bad actors. Like there is this one guy carrying his own microphone around, just at any protest, he starts ranting about how he does not recognize Biden as president of America. Like, and this has got nothing to do in America. He's giving a speech in the center of Skopje, and he's talking about how Trump shall liberate hundreds of thousands of children from the basements of the pedophile Satanists. Yeah. And he's talking about how the Archbishop is drinking Masonic wine, which is my favorite schizophrenic conspiracy theory. If I'm doing it's talking about the pedophiliac hallways and Masonic wine of the Archbishop, and it's got all of the elements of a good.
Yeah. You know,
and you get one of these people going.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just insane how much, and he's not, and this is a you know, counterintelligence person, so we know what's going on over there. But the idea is, of course, to tar the protests with the brush of, I think it's even worse than someone unfolding a Nazi flag. Because, you know, we had a few skinheads in our first anti-lockdown protests here.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, these guys are rough, but no, they're not exactly foul optics. I think people are far more afraid of complete nutcases or people, you know, counterintelligence agents pretending to be complete nutcase than maybe some
and
guys.
And this is something that I've spoke many times. I made a lengthy video about this. I've spoken about it in my Telegram chat to my followers there. So I'm actually being quite consistent in my analysis of the truckers as well, because I've been saying for, you know, during the past year in which there have been more protests, because this whole thing has been going on now for about two full years, and it's been in the second year that there's been more of a reaction protest about it. And I've said that the protests, I wouldn't go near one. They don't accomplish anything. And, you end up with these people getting the shit beat out of them by the police. Old grandmothers are getting sprayed in the face with, mace by pepper sprayed by the police. You know, then David Icke shows up, and I don't mind David Icke. He's fine. I'm entertained by him. He's an interesting guy. But when he gets up there and he says, like, you know, this is the Fourth Reich. These are the Nazis and all this stuff. And, you know, it's boomer truthisms everywhere. Then the QAnons show up. And then, like you said, a guy in Macedonia is going on about the U.S. election. Like, what does that have to do with anything? I have members in my Telegram chat who live in Australia, and I've talked about, you know, attending some of the protests. And for the most part, it's fine. It's a good atmosphere. Everyone is you know, well behaved, and it's a great atmosphere, and it's good for, you know, moral support and networking. But there's always this element of QAnons, and I also don't have anything against conspiracy theorists. I think it, you know, a correct term is conspiracy researchers. I don't have anything against that. But when you get into like the really weird stuff, like, you know, Donald Trump is the second coming, and he's going to save us all, and we're all going to ride over the demonic forces on white horses, and this has been prophesied, and Q is coming, and watch the waters, and all this stuff. It's like, okay, no. Focus on some achievable objectives.
I don't even mind, you know, conspiracy, because basically you've mentioned the boomer truth, so I assume you're also like a listener of Academic Agent.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
So you know about elite theory of politics and history. Well, I was thinking about this basically. Elite theory is basically conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really, people get together and they plan how things are going to be. And maybe there is no specific point by point plan, but they have a common goal which they strive towards, and that's a conspiracy theory.
Yeah,
and I happen to think that's how the world works.
Exactly. I have nothing against, you know, and I do believe that there are definitely legitimate reasons to believe in some of the conspiracy theories, if you want to call them that. You know, it's a bit of a derogatory term, but definitely what I'm saying is there's a time and a place for them, and when you want to, I think we should have laser-like focus on when we're participating in these protests or organizing these protests. What do we want? No mandatory vaccines. When do we want them? Now. And nothing else. Don't worry about the other stuff right now. That's it. And what happens with these protest movements is they devolve into what they always do, because Protests attract a kind of personality. They attract a kind of person. The right has never been very good at protests, traditionally, typically speaking. The right has never been good at it. And they don't accomplish anything because, as we are learning, as the smoke is being blown away, the veil is being pulled off of our eyes, we are seeing that all of those great protest movements that we were taught about from the, you know, the 60s, whatever, they were all top down. They were all astroturfed. So these right. grassroots protests against the flu world order, the Great Reset, whatever you want to call it, they're not going to have much success because they're not being controlled by the top down.
Either, you know, grassroots. So it's just basically, and I'm going to insult a lot of people by saying this, a peasant uprising, right? Mm-hmm. Which doesn't mean it's ultimately going to be ineffective, right? And that's another thing about historically, the peasant uprisings, they were very rarely, they had concrete and achievable objectives. They knew they were never going to get rid of the Lord, but they could enter his castle, ransack it, and burn the tax records.
Yes. This was it something... was it you then, or was it someone else who said, I remember seeing this a few days ago, someone mentioned a peasant's revolt from some moment in history, and how they stormed the castle. The lord of the manor, the lord of the town, actually, you know, came out to meet them. Mm-hmm. The peasants demanded that some of the, you know, the nobles who had been abusing them be punished. They had, you know, torched some buildings and made their anger felt, and the lord of the manor, you know, came out and conceded to them and rounded up the nobles who had, you know, so angered the peasants, executed them, and the peasants went home happy and got what they wanted. At the end, the person who posted said, like, we're less free than peasants in the 15th century.
Absolutely.
We have less influence than the peasants of the 15th century.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, you know, to be totally honest.
That wasn't me. But this is actually very common among peasant uprisings. They have very specific and concrete goals, and more often than not, they achieve them because they mm-hmm. do not attempt something which is impossible, like kill the king or institute socialism.
Or go into pitch battle against the armored knights.
We're going to hit the aristocracy where it hurts them,
exactly.
where they are vulnerable, and we're going to have achievable, clear, concrete objectives. And this is something I like about your analysis of the trucker revolt. There is nothing Trudeau can do about he's not imposing. Okay, we know that ultimately the provinces wouldn't be doing it without his okay. But he has plausible deniability that this is not.
Exactly.
Now, Trudeau is a complete moron and has bungled the optics side.
And he's also said horrible things about the Canadians who don't want to be vaccinated. He's said horrible things. He's poisoned the well. He's incited ill will towards huge swathes of the Canadian population. I get that he is culpable for some things, but he's not the dictator, you know. He's not the king. And so you can direct your ire at him, okay. But like you said, he has plausible deniability. He can just say, look, I just support these decisions, but it's the provinces, it's the premiers of these provinces who you need to go to. Leave me alone. You know, let me.
Another thing, people are like, when you have someone as hateable as Trudeau at the forefront, you understand the utility of having such a punchable face, you know, as at the head, because people lose sight of their goals. What is our goal? We want an end to the vaccine mandates. But then they're like, Trudeau must go. We have to hit.
And that's the Tory influence. That's the conservatives grifting onto it and saying, no, let's turn this into a political struggle against the our opposition party that we want to take a few more seats from.
Which is not trying what we're trying to achieve.
Exactly, right? exactly.
Trudeau's, they come and go, but our problems remain. The point is not to get force Trudeau out of power. The point is to promulgate specific policies and end others which we disagree with. This is something that the right has, I think that the right wing, the entire right wing, not just the mainstream right, but we in the alternative right, the dissident right as well, we have a problem with soldier brain, We want to personalize the enemy. We want to defeat the enemy. We want to meet them in pitched combat, right? And all of the stuff we're suggesting, like the Romans before us, like Fabius Cunctator was, you know, Fabian the Delayer, he was considered unmanly because he didn't want to meet Hannibal in open combat. You know, the Romans had to have their asses handed to them before they...
Three times. Before they learned. And I mentioned in the essay too, I long for the days, I wish we lived in times when honorable, brave warriors could heed the call to arms, put on their armor, march into battle with their comrades, and skill and excellence in combat and bravery would win the day. But we don't live in those times, unfortunately. And so that's not how you're going to win the day nowadays. Nowadays, I mentioned in the article, nowadays, an obese Latina miles away from danger can guide a drone strike that totally obliterates the hardened warriors who are sleeping by their campfire on a mountainside. You know, this
Although, by not engaging the gay empire in open combat, the Taliban won, right? Through delaying measures, through
I think they, so not to go back to what we were like almost fed posting about, but they did what I was saying. They are serious. They are a serious people and they took serious action, but they did it within a Fabian strategy framework. I mean, it took them a long time and lots of small scale victories and skirmishes and grinding away at the gay, at the big empire, the evil empire. And, you know, ultimately, if you don't want to get into, you know, like conspiracies, were they helped? Was it all a psyop? Blah, 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 whatever.
Oh, they were, they were definitely helped at the very least by the Chinese, you know, maybe even by the Russians, who knows? But that's a legitimate thing, right? People are saying, oh, well, they were just helped by the, well, yes, of course, rival empires will fund your opposition.
Right.
This is going to happen.
Just analyzing it just as, you know, the facts of the matter. Whatever you want to say, you know, because I concede that there might be, you know, other reasons for why America pulled out in such a chaotic manner that have nothing to do with, you know, simple militaristic victories for the Taliban. There's something else going on. Okay, fine. But on the face of it, what did happen was, it's also true to say that, outmatched warriors, modern day warriors, did defeat a superior force through Fabian strategy, through grinding them down, not giving up, and they were very serious about it. Right. And that's how they got what they ultimately wanted, which was to eject the United States from their country.
We have comments in the regular chat on D Live are saying that the one of the goals of the trucker protest should be that we want a trucker sworn in as president tomorrow, and he has to be a big, fat, beer-bellied trucker. the fattest, toughest ones that can be found.
Yes, liftocracy.
Right. This is something I can get behind. You know, I've known some truckers in my time. They are good people.
Yeah,
they tell me the disgusting stories about prostitutes sometimes, but they're also fun. If you want to hear the best, if you want people are saying, oh, you should do this to get women, you should do that. Take a road trip with a trucker. They like to talk when they're driving. That's something I found out. And you'll learn a lot more about women than you want to know. Believe you and me. And yes, many of them are big-bellied and they're fat. But I don't really hold this against them. Yeah. I wouldn't fight them.
Their job is very sedentary after all.
But they're not weak. Like... a lot of fat truckers I know, and a lot of fat people I know are very strong. That's something to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. Strong fat brothers rise, big belly nationalism.
I mean, have you ever take a look at most power lifters? Power lifters are usually pretty fat. All their muscle, or even rugby players, depending on your position, rugby players are also quite portly. But underneath all that fat is a lot of muscle and sinew.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard that too. Personally, I wouldn't know because I'm just big boned. I could be slightly overweight right now, but I mean, we discussed this before we went on the show, so let's not reveal any much. Alaska Chaga has donated one ninjagini, and he says, in the Soviet era, they called this type of non-compliance samizdat. It was highly effective. Well, there was non-compliance in the Soviet era, but samizdat refers to self-publishing dissident literature. There is actually a very good example from Soviet, the Soviet era Poland, where Solidarnosc, which is the group which basically fought against the Soviet regime in Poland, would print its dissident newspaper by night on government presses with government ink on government paper. So this is an excellent example of sticking it to the man. You know, use their resources to defeat them, right? Mm-hmm. Something we should.
It's about. Kind of in the modern era. You can sort of say that that's like us using platforms that hate us, but we still use them to get our message out. Like you mentioned, we've talked about Twitter, right? Twitter is obviously a shithole, but why not use it? They hate us, but here we are on it, using it for our propagandistic purposes. And the same with Substack. I don't think Substack is going to, uphold their supposed commitment to free speech for long. What I mean, they've already been, The Guardian, for example, has already put them in the crosshairs. But in the meantime, why not? And so, just like printing your dissident propaganda on government paper with government ink. Let's use these platforms that hate us for our own purposes. It's kind of a win. It's like, we're winning because we're using your platform and you hate us, but we're using it for our nefarious purposes.
We are encumbering your servers, right? At the very least. I find it funny that just as now we're talking about Polish resistance, Ordynacja 55, which I believe is a Polish name, there, Kritikt has sent us 5 ice creams. Bartleby, he has sent us one ice cream on DLive. And those are the donations for the time being. Now, I think I had one more thing to say. We talked about possible strategies. I want to address something by Birhol Puch, where he's calling us reactionary elitists. I will say I am an elitist, yes, but I'm not. I don't consider myself a reactionary, or at least not anymore. We are indeed reacting against the not just the excesses, but the absolute evil of modern liberalism, progressivism, what you want to call it. But I don't think that we can return to anything. I think we can only go forward. I think we need to forge a new ideological paradigm. Now, we can learn from the old ideological paradigms, yes, but I don't think any of the old forms will be helpful to us here. And as for the elitism charge, you can call us whatever you want. We are, in a sense, an elite group. People who create content. We are the voice of this movement. We define the parameters of this movement. We determine its direction. And that's something people are going to have to learn with, to live with, especially content creators, right? Many of us are just not ready for the role, especially because so many have been thrown into this role, right? And I'm not aggrandizing myself when I say this, because if you're in my shoes, you have to prepare a show every week, right? The writer's block. I also have obligations for countercurrents. I have to write articles, and I can't just write anything, right? It has to be relevant to the cause. It has to advance the cause. I make decisions here, which affect the direction of the movement, and that's a big responsibility.
Even people who aren't leaders or creators of articles and videos and shapers of opinion, the term we use for people not in our sphere is normie. So by contrast, you are not a normie. Therefore, you are better than them. You are more intelligent than them. You are more awake than them. you have ascended to a higher plane than them. That is an elitist mentality. So I don't have anything against elite. I should do better. I try not to use elite to describe our enemies. We should go back to calling them, you know, incompetent politicians or fat cats or the powers that should not be or something.
I just call them the enemy.
The enemy, exactly. Because right. There's nothing wrong with an elite. And I've been doing a lot of, you know, reading and discussing in previous videos and in my Telegram chat about the ancient Greeks and their civilization. And I totally am in favor of aristocratic egalitarianism, equality amongst the aristocrats. And I consider myself an aristocrat. I am not someone who sits on the sofa all day scratching my balls and watching Netflix and the football and just happy to do whatever society or the controllers thereof tell me to do. I try and think for myself. I'm intellectually rigorous with myself. I also train physically. You know, we were talking about this earlier. A bit more difficult nowadays in my situation. But before all of this madness happened, I was, you know, always in the gym and also was training martial arts and stuff. So no, I hold myself to a higher standard. I expect that we should all behave this way and we should consider ourselves an elite. And there's nothing wrong with that. Society always needs an elite and always has had an elite. Any sort of civilized society has an elite. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Oh, yeah, sure. And then another thing, too, is like, again, not to be self-aggrandizing or anything like that, but, you know, I've heard it spoken that there's some in our little sphere who believe that we should behave more like a warrior class. And that might be those who are really supportive of the truckers and think it's based and great what they're doing. And then there's those of us who see ourselves as more of the priestly class. And the idea would be priestly warriors or warrior priests. But there is nothing wrong with having a priestly class. And we are sort of, you know, we talk a lot about forming communities and forming parallel societies and separate communities from this, you know, regime. And we've kind of already done that in a sense. We have created a new entirely parallel media system. We have created entirely different and parallel talking heads intelligentsia. We have created parallel news media and even in some cases entertainment. I think we should focus more on the entertainment a bit and the arts and literature and pastimes. You know, not everything has to be political and ideological, just good music.
I think there's like about 20 minutes of conversation in this, and I've been thinking about this a lot, the non-political dissonance, because if you think about it, like my Mrs. Gilvey, okay, she understands the political stuff, but many of her friends, they're not political, but they dissent from the mainstream in the sense that they do not dress like, you know, they don't dress like whores. That's always good in a woman. I prefer women to be dressed like they're not whores. and this is, you know, some of my hipster friends before they disavowed me for my racism against, they bucked the trend on fashion, they bucked the trend on entertainment. A lot of people I know, and I'm in these circles because I'm a bit of a foodie, they bucked the trend on nutrition. And this is, I think, the largest and most readily radicalizable non-political dissident group.
Yes. But I've talked about them in the past as, you know, for sort of like localism as being a counter to globalism. And I've said, even in a video I made, like one of my very first videos, I might, you know, looking back, maybe I was a bit too naive, but I did mention that, you know, these hipster types are already very familiar with the concept of buying local, shopping local, support your local coffee shop, support your local butchers, support your local what have you. And so, yeah, I think there's very fertile ground amongst this. But the, you know what the problem is? The problem is we're really late to arrive to them. They've already been paused by our enemy, got to them first. But that doesn't mean it's hopeless. And I think if you use, like we were talking about earlier, about good behavior and good rhetoric and how you present yourself and presenting yourself as a gentleman, as an attractive person with an attractive ideology, if you meet them halfway and you tap into their already well-established concepts of support your local community, support your local economy, and just expand it and say, look, I want that mentality expanded to the rest of the nation. And that's why I call myself a nationalist, for example. You know, if you do that politely and if you do that attractively, more often than not, you will make some headway and they, you know, they might nod in agreement and say you've got a point, and then the next day they're back on Facebook posting normie bullshit. Or no, you know, again, Fabian strategy, just keep chipping away, have another conversation with them, have another one, and slowly, slowly you might find that they join us, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I've said that essentially, if you want to red pill people who are not political, I'm not going to use the term normie to describe them, but it's better to try and red pill people who have already internalized the fact that the government and the media lie to them. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, people who are foodies, who are, you know, health freaks a little bit, yes, they already know that the government is lying to them with the food pyramid and all of these things.
Yep. And I'm seeing that, actually. I'm seeing that. Right. I'm seeing a lot of foodies, given the fact that nutrition is such a great way to stave off illness.
And it's a very important thing, right?
Yes.
You eat every day.
I have seen a lot of, just over the past, you know, 12 months, I have seen like normal doctors sort of like in their sphere, dissident doctors, because they're either, you know, in support of a carnivore diet, or they are dissident against the food pyramid and government regulations regarding diet. And I've seen over the past months, they have become very close to where we are. They, you know, I know of some doctors who have put, you know, laser eyes in their profile picture, and ooh, getting pretty spicy there, you know, getting pretty spicy. And they've plugged cryptocurrencies and stuff. Now, I'm not going to get into cryptocurrency and my thoughts on that, but you know, that's a sign of, you know, some dissidents there, you know. And they have made, I know of some doctors that I was following, this one doctor, he actually got his Instagram account banned because he was going too hard against the official narrative, and he was going too hard against the Biden administration. He was calling out the Biden administration. He was getting too close to the sun. And so they banned his Instagram account. He had to start all over. So yes, I think you're right. There's a lot of opportunity for as bad as everything has been. There's a lot of opportunity within what has been happening for the past couple of years to achieve some real world wins here and garner more influence over the minds of our peers and our brethren, get more people on our side, because it is important to have the numbers. It is important. And then hopefully more and more we get closer to that day where we can transfer online activity into some real world activity that we control and we organize, and we're not going to let Getter and gay Jewish activists and Tories take control and tell us what to do.
Right.
But you know, you need to acquire some influence first, and you get more influence with more numbers. So yeah, there's definitely, because I see people all saying like, well, you know, oh, stop worrying about trying to red pill the norms. I still think it's a good thing.
Performing the journalistic function is actually very low cost. Thanks to, you know, something which is very hated in our circles, modern technology. But I remember one time I was here in Macedonia, I was covering the election. It was after a parliamentary election, I think, may have been. No, it was presidential. No, it was parliamentary. Sorry. And here I am. I see the normie journalists, right? The mainstream media. They're there with their hundreds of thousands of pounds of equipment. And I'm there with my dinky phone on a selfie stick. And I'm just rotating my phone to live streaming. Yeah, here's the mainstream media. Look at all their expensive shit, so they can do the same thing I do on this cheap ass phone. Mm-hmm. You know, let's just point and laugh at them, and let's have an S in chat for the. This is very irreverent. Then I got manhandled by security, but that was all part of the show. And I gotta say, we need to have people on the ground. One thing I'm kicking myself over is that I was not in Ottawa to do the reportage. Mm-hmm. right? We should have people on the ground in every major city on the planet, or at least the white countries, you know. Mm-hmm. So that we can never, we should not rely on the mainstream media for our basic factographic gathering, just a basic empiricism. And this is a bitter lesson I learned from my streams with Endeavor and Edward Slavsklad with Riley Wagaman, that I was basically being spoon-fed this narrative about Russia by, you know, pro-Kremlin media. And these are these guys living in Russia. They're telling me, no, it's actually not like that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, holy shit, I didn't know nothing about Russia. Mm-hmm. And now these guys, they're living in Russia. They're telling me what's going on. So anyways, Mr. Populi, we've been going for 2 hours and 5 minutes, and I think that this might be a good time to wrap up. Let's briefly recapitulate the points you want to make, in less than 1 minute, so that people can just have a good sound bite out of you, and then tell everyone where they can find you, how can they support your work, and all of those end of live stream things.
Okay. Yeah, just to sum up then, I would say that there is no shame in showing the better part of valor and using your wits and showing caution when it comes to these things. It's very easy to mount a psyop. It's very easy to manipulate controlled opposition and create controlled opposition. And you should simply keep your wits about you. Have a simple heuristic of, if these certain types of people are getting involved, it's probably bad news, and I should not give them my financial support. I should not give them my information, and I should not give them my endorsement if I have people who might respect my endorsement. And that's the facts of life that we're living in. This is the fact of living in a decaying civilization. You have to accept these things for good or ill. This is just the way it is.
We were going to talk about the decaying civilization, but it completely slipped my mind. I guess we're going to have to discuss that next time. All right. Have certainly enjoyed this show, Pox, and I will call on you in some future instance of the writer's block. But for the time being, this has been the writer's block. Our guest was Pox Populi. You can find him on Substack, Telegram, Gab, all of those different sites, if the mods would just dump them all into the chat, into the Odyssey and the live chat. So I want to thank everyone who watched. I want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch, everyone who was commenting in the chat. We had a very, very vigorous chat today. So thank you for that. I monitor everything at all times. Do not think you can ever escape me. The guy who was insulting Pox's sweater, you have been permanently banned and you will not return to this channel. Anti-sweater is code word for anti-white. Ugly sweater is just an anti-white canard. It's the way it is. I want to thank everyone who donated. I want to thank everyone who asked questions. I want to thank our courageous and indomitable moderators, Gadius, Maximus, and Bartleby, who have been keeping the chat very civil. I believe we have cultivated genuine civilized salon energy in our chat. And of course, I think the MVP for today in the chat is Beer Howl Pooch. He's been providing opposition and a pushback to our positions, but that is the price of salon culture. Someone's always going to call you stupid. Someone's always going to question your positions. This is how we do things. So again, people, this has been the Writer's Block. I'm your friend and host, Nick Gilby. This show will be available for your replay pleasure at the Countercurrents website sometime next week. And I don't usually do this, but we do seem to be having a theme month for Canada. Next week on the Writer's Block, we're going to be having Endeavor on, and we're going to be discussing George Grant's Lament for a Nation, which is the book on Canadian nationalism and the primer on what I believe to be the first color revolution in the world. So we see you next week, people. We're going to have Boat Boy on. We're going to discuss Canuck stuff. I'm going to be wearing my best Canadian accent, which is to say, it's going to be hilarious. I'm just going to be saying about a lot of times. So until then, people, bye-bye. Bye-bye.